To tell a story today of God's amazing grace, his unfailing love, and we heard his heart. I remember when Moses heard his heart, he says, "And the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and I have heard their cry because of their taskmasters, for I am aware of their sufferings. So I have come down to deliver them from the power of the Egyptians and to bring them up from a land to a good land and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey." We've been married for 22 years. We've had our house for 21 years. I remember somebody said, "Well, I got to have $10,000 to start a house." And we said, "Well, we don't have to have any." So we just started. But God gave us a vision. And the main thing you want to do is get his heart. It says Mary sat at his feet and heard his words. And Jesus said, "This is the most important thing, just for you to sit at my feet and hear my words and then just follow." And Martha was busy serving. And there was a time too, the disciples, they missed his heart because he was saying, "Oh, I'm going to go and I'm going to die." And then they'd get in arguments, who's going to be the greatest? So they missed his heart. So all we did was plug into the Lord's heart. And we're just going to tell you some of the stories.
I left my list at home. I really tried hard to remember everything. I had to go back at one point for something I forgot. But, I'm going to tell the story about the prophecy. So we were in this apartment. So this is kind of how we started, and it was kind of like little pieces all put in place, you know, little by little. And so we lived upriver for a while. We had just like a year just to be on the Mackenzie. We were living right on the Mackenzie, and it was a great time, except there were lots of floods.
It was a glorious year. We got married, and there's this joke that says, you think you're going into the sunset, and it's a bonfire. But the thing was, when we got married, it was glorious. It was really a sunset. And so for that first year, it was just fabulous.
Yeah.
So, of course, I was 47.
Yeah. You were just a kid. So anyway, we moved into an apartment, and we... there was a pastor that John Higgins, who was over a whole bunch of Calvary Chapel things and was actually really active. He was the residing person, I guess, the superintendent of Shiloh. Is that right?
We had 50 houses, 50 homeless houses across the United States. He was in charge of
over 100,000 kids. 100,000 of them went through this program, Shiloh. But anyway, he came to our apartment for just a visit, and he prophesied over us, and he said that this is going to be a place like Obed-Edom. And so I was looking that up just again. I had kind of forgotten about it. But Obed-Edom was the place, you know, where they put the ark after... they tried to set it right, you know, and touched it, and God, you know, just fried them. And David was going like, "Whoa, you know, what in the world's that?" You know, and so he kind of just like, "Well, I'm getting rid of it. I'm gonna, you know, just put this thing aside for a second, for a while." And so he put it in this house of Obed-Edom. Obed-Edom means gatekeeper. What else was it? He was also like a singer or a worshiper. So there were these things that all went into that name of his family in that house. And they came to David and they said, "You know, the Lord's really blessing this house." And so David then went to the house after 3 months, and then they did everything right, you know, according to how it was set forth in Leviticus to do that. So anyway, this is what John Higgins prophesied over. He says, "This is going to be a house like Obed-Edom." We're going like, "Wow, you know, man, that's cool." So anyway, our little apartment, at different times, Crispies would come in. I call them Crispies. They were Christian hippies. They'd bring the hippie bus, right? But it was all full of these Christians. It was, and they were called Jesus Love You Ministries. And they would crowd into this little apartment that we have, and it was just jammed. It was just body against body, you know. And so this is how we got to know these guys. And even to this day, we still, you know, communicate with them. This last summer, we went to Chicago to Soldiers Field for the Grateful Dead farewell tour and ministered to thousands of kids there. And so, you're trying.
We met these guys. They were the Rainbow Gathering, and it's what they would do. They would lead a bunch of people to the Lord, and then they came to our house and asked us if they could stay. And they had three buses, and they were packed with brand new Christians. So they stayed with us every year for about 8 years.
And then Earl Everett, had this place that he had. It was a duplex, and he had people staying in the basement, him and Helen, and there were several people staying down there. One guy was staying in what he called the canning room, and so that was where Helen kept all of her canned goods. And so he said, "I think you guys should have this place." Well, we said, okay, fine, let's do it, you know. And we went through a lot of problems. One problem was that they wanted $4,000 down, and we were on like, oh, well, you know, we don't have them. Oh, well, you know, just pray, you'll get it. And sure enough, it did. It came in, so we got the place. And we were still in the apartment. We were in the process of moving in, and I got a knock on the door early in the morning. You Mr. Kesey? Yes. Well, are you moving into this house over there on Cobbing Street? Yes. Well, it's on fire. As a matter of fact, it's burning really bad. So I, you know, put on some clothes, went over there, and sure enough, you know, they had already gotten the fire out, but it was, a lot of our stuff was burned, and someone had actually set it on fire. They found where they had poured an accelerant around the door, around the house and the living room there. Which turned out to be a blessing. We got the whole place remodeled. So we got, you know, a new kitchen, new, you know, new rugs, all this stuff. So, yeah, it was a blessing.
Before that happened, we looked over the city of Eugene, and we just thought, we saw all these people. In those days, they were in the industrial area. And they were just camping out on the street. And we thought, well, how can we help them? And so we just went out and started serving food. And so we did that for a while. And then Dale was, we were at Calvary Chapel. And we didn't have hardly anybody in our church. And so we would bring in these music groups, and nobody would come. So we read this scripture. It says, well, go to the highways and byways and get them. If they don't come in, get them to come in. So we just started going to the highways and byways and asking them to come in. And I went around and said, I know what we'll do. I was in Youth for Christ, and they had these fundraiser dinners. And I thought, we'll do these dinners just like the fundraisers. We'll just make this expensive place, and we'll invite the homeless, and we'll be the servants, and we'll serve them. And so that's exactly what we did. Well, I stood up in church and said, okay, now we're going to start a homeless ministry. We need people to help us. How many people can help? And we got 7 hands. And so the thing that was hard about it, I said, if you know how to cook, we need you. Because I didn't even know how to cook. And the Lord was going to have me cook these meals for the homeless. And I had, when Dale and I got married, I had 3 specialties. And he didn't like any of them. And he said, your hamburgers taste like cardboard. And I still have a little, you know, hard time cooking hamburgers to this day. But anyways, so we just started feeding the homeless. Now, our pastor, he didn't really come to the dinners, but we didn't have any phones in those days either. And I said, you can't have, we'd ask people, we'd have like 350, 400 people. I said, you can't have 350 or 400 people and not have a phone. So we had these big dinners for about a year. And one time Dale said, well, let's have a Southern Fried Chicken dinner. And I said, okay, great. Southern Fried Chicken. I put all the announcements out. We're going to have Southern Fried Chicken dinner. Well, 2 days before, there was no chicken. And I said, Dale, are you sure? Are you positive that you heard the Lord? We're supposed to have Southern Fried Chicken. Because we were just walking by faith. We didn't have any money. And so he said, yeah, I'm pretty sure I heard the Lord. Well, then somebody...
like 300 or 400 people there, too.
Yeah. So then... I think that's distracting, honey. Yeah.
That's okay. It'll just keep on going. Don't look at the picture.
Okay, so...
Okay, wait, so I was still a little bit judgmental about these people. My thing was, get a job, you bum. Kind of, no, I know that sounds bad, but that's kind of how I felt. But I got to know a lot of the homeless people because we'd pick them up and give them rides. And also, we would pray for them. And so we had a prayer team kind of, and this one girl, well, as a matter of fact, it was B. Peterson. She was praying for one of the kids that we brought in and the families, you know, to do these dinners. And it was at Christmas time. And anyway, she was praying for this kid, and she'd come out and she was just bawling. She was just crying and crying and just, you know, just kind of freaking out. What's the matter, B? What's going on? You know, and she's, I don't know this little boy. I was praying. I asked him what he wanted prayer for, and he said, my dad. And I'm going, well, yeah. And she said, well, what's wrong with your dad, son? And he said, well, he's going to die tomorrow, and he's going to be executed in prison. And so she was just rocked to the core then, you know. I mean, it was just... So it was kind of like that, you know. I mean, a lot of times you just, you know, so many of the people that we ministered to and that came through, it was just amazing stories, you know. I mean, there were just a lot of times. I mean, like this one guy had pneumonia because he'd been helicopter logging. He was setting chokers in helicopters, and the wind, you know, from the helicopters, you know, really give you pneumonia, and so he was out of a job, and just on and on like that. So my judgmental, you know, prejudice kind of got washed away, that there's so many stories out there, so many stories, so many people. We could, it'd take a long time to tell us.
So it's what we did is we did the homeless dinners for about a year, and then that's when Earl Everett came and wanted us to buy his house. And Lord, please help me.
So anyway, we did get the house after the fire was all cleaned up and everything. And there was somebody living next door, and we didn't have anything. We started planting plants and so forth. And there was somebody living next door to it. I mean, it was a duplex. And so we said, well, you've got to move. And they didn't like that very much.
So we were praying, Lord, what name do you want us to call this house that we're going to get, this homeless house? And we were fasting and praying, and we went to this businessman's meeting, and this guy says, I know the name of your house. And we said, oh, great, what is it? He said, The Last Resort. And the next day I went down and got all these, I went to Goodwill, and I saw all these hotel bedspreads, and I thought, wow, this is supposed to be a resort. I'm going to make this into a resort. Well, I didn't quite understand what the last resort meant, but we had this one guy that was in and out of smoking marijuana, and he had quit, but he, different things happened to him, but anyways, he was at our house, he ended up dead with a heroin needle stuck in his arm at a park, and the Lord showed me through that, this is the last resort, and the people that I send here are going to, you know, they may die. So every person that the Lord would send, we would just act like we may never see you again. You know, we didn't tell them that, but
so I was He's seen the long term. Well, I worked for about the first 10 years that we had the house. You know, I worked around a bunch of guys, and they were pretty rough, you know, loggers, what do you say? And anyway, they found out, you know, that I was doing this house, and they'd go like, Dale, you know, how can you leave your wife home alone with guys that, you know, that are off the streets and like, you know, who knows what, you know? And I told them, you know what? Those guys wouldn't have a chance.
One time we got, he says, oh, Pam, I'm going to work. It was 3 a.m. He went off to work, and he said, now, I called the cops, so just greet him and have him come in. And we had a guy sleeping in the kitchen, you know, on the floor drunk. And so I said, oh, follow me to the cops. And they go, no, you get behind. We're going in first. So I remember one time the Lord told me to fast and pray. And every time the Lord told me to fast and pray, it was really serious. It might be life and death. And I remember, and so I tried to really obey the Lord. But one time I was fasting, and then we came home, and two guys were in a fight, you know. And I just says, I just rebuke this in the name of Jesus. And they just split up instantly. So,
So many stories, and like I said, I left my list at home. About a year ago, we kind of changed direction. As a matter of fact, almost exactly a year ago, and it actually just started happening that way. I started teaching classes at the Life Change Program there at the Eugene Mission, and I saw what a difference it was to minister to guys that had really made a decision to follow the Lord and had really wanted to change. And so I said, let's start trying to find those kind of people. And the Lord started giving us those kind of people. So right now, you can help me with this, Greg. We have Greg and Dale. Brian, who, these three guys, we would not be able to make it without. They're just helpers, you know. They want to help, and they, you know, I'm getting more deranged all the time, not because of age, I don't think, but maybe. But anyway, they are such great helpers, and then we have Bill, big tall Bill that came out of the Life Change. We have Jeff, who also has come out of the Life Change, who was on meth for 38 years. Nice guy, nice, great guy. And my oldest son, Nathan, who is having a lot of medical problems right now, and so he's been with us several years now, going through this after he got laid off at Sacred Heart Hospital, and then Matt, Pam's nephew, is with us, and he's suffering from PTSD from the Marine Corps, and then we have Mike, who unfortunately hasn't made the program, but anyway, and then we have who else do we have? Steven, who's elderly gentleman who can't get around very good, but he can ride a bike and loves the Lord. And who else do we have? George. George is back. George has been with us for a long time. How many people know George? And so he's still struggling. But I don't know. What are you going to do? Just keep praying for him. Jesse. Jesse's also from the Life Change Program, very solid guy, doesn't talk very much, and he's got a job now with Rexius. And Joe, yes, Joe is kind of quiet. You just kind of see him every once in a while. He does a lot of CR programs, Celebrate Recovery programs. And is that it? Chuck, Oh, yeah, Chuck. Well,
do you want to talk about Chuck?
We just take who the Lord sends us. No, the story that I was going to tell was there was this guy that got beat up real bad, him and his girlfriend, and they were out in the field. And they went to the hospital, and they came back, and they got beat up again. And they were just, like, really bad. And so they asked Dale if they could come, and so he came to our house, and he was there for a month, just in bed the whole time. And so he was recuperating. We were going on vacation at this, we had another guy in the house who, he wanted to get away from this other house because they were drinking over there. So he came to our house to get away from that house. And he had an operation in his stomach, and so he was having trouble working. But he did go out and work. We went on vacation, and they called us up and said, Paul's dead. And we said, what do you mean Paul's dead? And methadone. Some people take methadone because they, it's like to get off heroin. And so somebody gave him some methadone, and he died. So we've had tons of stories. We had one guy that came and said he wanted to live at our house with his girlfriend, and we said, no way, we don't believe in that. And so we said, you need to get counsel. And he decided he didn't want to get counsel, but then the police came over and said, we want to look for this guy. And we said, you do? And they said, yeah, we want to search your house. And apparently, we didn't let him live at our house, but he had lived there before. But it's what happened is he stabbed his girlfriend. And she was at Dairy Mart, and, you know, he went to prison.
Well, she was okay.
Oh, she was okay. She turned out to be okay. But, I mean, so we always have, there's always crisis at our house. I mean, there's like one crisis after another, really.
So yesterday as we were preparing what we were going to do and say and so forth, this guy knocks on the door, and he was just very familiar. As a matter of fact, Pam and I married him. It's been about 3 or 4 years ago, probably, him and his wife, maybe longer than that. But anyway, turned out to be really a mess of a marriage. And boy, both of them were really messed up. Anyway, he appeared and at her door and said, hi, you know, how are you doing? And he just seemed to be very, very together. I mean, we looked at him. I mean, it's just like, wow, come on in, you know, let's talk. And so he comes in. Well, he's been working at the same job for 2 years, 3 years. He's it's a big company down in Coos Bay that does seafood. They take it off the ships and freeze it and so forth. So he's got this fabulous job. He's got a new pickup. He had divorced from his first wife, this wife that was kind of a problem. And anyway, he had gone to counseling and so forth, and completely a different person than the one that we knew. And so there's always those, you know, that call and that come back or that we hear from after years and years that are just doing good. And so in a sense, that's a reward, but the reward is just doing it, just meeting the people and seeing the people and helping the people where we can, and so that's about it. I think we've got to wrap it up, don't we? Yes, Frank?
So in a nutshell, why do you do what you do?
Do you want to answer that? That's a hard question.
In a nutshell, the Lord called us to do it. Yeah, we're just doing what he's doing. There was this girl that was in the park. Her name was Sandra. And I used to go down to the park, and I asked her to, you know, Dale doesn't let me have girls at the house very often, but we had Sandra. And so she'd come and stay with us for maybe 2 weeks or maybe 2 months or just different times Dale would let her stay. And, oh, honey, she wasn't that big. She didn't have food stamps or anything, you know, so she just ate what she could. But anyways, I loved Sandra. She was just a sweet, sweet girl. One time I got a call. I was on vacation. They said, well, Sandra's dying. And I said, what? She's only about 40. And they said, no, she's dying. She's going to die before too long. And so I said, okay, let me talk to her. And I said, oh, Sandra, you're going to go and be with the Lord. And she said, well, no, I don't think so, Pam. And then she died like, oh, I don't know, a couple hours later. So we've had a lot of people that have died and gone on with the Lord, and that's why we're called the Last Resort.
Yeah, each one of these pictures that you see, there's such a story behind each one of them, and so we just kind of treasure these things in our heart, knowing, and we just continuing on. I'm working on a video project right now that mentally impaired homeless people, because I believe that there's no place really for the mentally impaired, and there's just either jail or on the streets. And so might be praying for that, because it's really hard for me to do that right now. But anyway, I'm working on it. I see that hand. In a nutshell, why do... I think that it was something that just, like I said, it just happened that I was out, you know, evangelizing on the street. I see this guy that's, you know, asleep in front of this bar. I bring him home. Will Oldendorf. and then just a little bit, you know, and then Pam and I, she has a heart for them, and I said, yeah, I know what you mean. And so then we just, it was the Lord. It was just like I said, I didn't really want to do it because I had this prejudice. But it was the Lord just, you know, he pushes you, he keeps you going in it, you know. And it's kind of like, why did you start playing the guitar? You know, I mean, it's just... It was something that it's been fun. It's been great. What an adventure! I mean, we've got to go through this all. You know, we've got to go to Cuba and Israel and Scotland and Ireland and where else? Guatemala. I don't know. We it's such an adventure. You know, it's just and not just because of this, maybe only, but. But through it all, you know, I mean, it's just an adventure. It's just such a great thing to be able to invest in people's lives and to hear them call back and say, thank you. Thank you so much, you know. And
We had one guy that, I just thought of this story. We had one guy that we were on vacation. Our car was broken down. And so we called home and they said, your van's missing. And we said, what? And they said, yeah, your van's missing. And we said, well, go ask this guy where our van is. He said, oh, he had it in to get it fixed. It was being fixed. Well, actually, it was in the impound. He was drunk driving and got it in the impound. And so I thought, oh, Lord, you know. Well, I had to rush home. We were in Bend someplace, and I had to catch a bus. I had to catch a bus to get home so we could get it out that day, and it would only cost us $500. And so, you know, we've had everything from fires to vans to stolen to you name it. We've kind of flowed with whatever, however. But we have seen a lot of people go into eternity that love the Lord, and